My family and I live on a dirt road in Canton Township. And so I always have an old towel that I have in our laundry room where we come back in after I take my dog Roxy for a jaunt around the neighborhood. When the days are dry, I just take the towel and dust off her feet, you know, from the dirt that might have been there. But when it's been raining, it becomes a more arduous process. We have a laundry tub right there. Sometimes I have to wet the towel and just begin to work off the mud that's gotten into her paws and on her legs to make sure she doesn't track the dirt into our house. Back in Jesus' day, everybody lived on a dirt road. And people walked either barefoot or with open-toed sandals. And so everybody's feet was either dusty or muddy. And so it was customary for people to kind of do what I did, to have a little bowl of water and a towel inside the front door. And it would be there, of course, if you came home to want to wash your feet. But if you had a distinguished guest come by your house, the protocol in Palestine was that you would have somebody available, usually the lowest ranking member of the house, which would often be a child in Jesus' day, or there would be a servant, if you could afford a servant, who would be on guard to wash the feet of whatever honored guest might have arrived at your house. Well, in our next scripture reading, we're going to hear a story about how 12 students and their distinguished master arrived for a very important meal. Protocol, again, would have been that one of the students would have taken position at that towel and basin to wash the feet of the master. But as we shall hear, that protocol got violated as the students just ran past that post, eager to not have to be the one to take on that lowly task. Listen now to how the story continues in John's Gospel. Now, before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with a towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you," for he knew who was to betray him. For this reason, he said, "Not all of you are clean." After he had washed their feet, had put on his robe, and had returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set an example for you, that you should do as I have done to you." May God bless to our hearing, our understanding, and to our living of God's holy word. A little over 50 years ago, this time in July, a man named Neil Armstrong stepped onto the lunar surface and offered those words that have become pretty much iconic when he said, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." And indeed, on July 20th, 1969, those words seemed to be profoundly true. For the first time in human history, man had left footprints in the dust, not on Earth, but on another celestial reality. It was an incredible achievement of technology and engineering to be able to get that rocket ship to land on the moon 250,000 miles away. The bravery and the skill of the astronauts was extraordinary. It seemed like we were indeed stepping or leaping into a giant step forward as a species. Here we are, a little over 53 years later, and I'm sort of wondering what kind of a leap we took as a species over the past 53 years, or in what direction we might have leapt. In many ways, of course, our world today is profoundly different than it was when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon. Technology has transformed how we live. We all now are beholden to the internet, the cell phones, the laptop computers. The way we think, the way we work, the way we conduct commerce, the way we think about where to live, all has changed because of advances in technology. And yet, in many ways, it seems to me that 2023 is not a whole lot different than 1969. I mean, we live in a time where we have tremendous cultural upheaval, profound disagreement about what our nation should be about, what kinds of values and laws should be passed. There are violent protests happening, people not seeing eye to eye, concerned that perhaps our culture is being torn apart by the profound tensions that we feel as people trying to occupy this part of Earth. In many ways, it seems like we are sort of stuck where we've been. We have new technology, but we aren't able to live in any more of a peaceful way, more just way than we have in the past. It would be a great thing, you know, if NASA could create a mission where on one particular day we as a species took a giant leap forward. But the human heart and the human mind and the human spirit aren't so easily engineered. To try to take a step forward in a way that would allow us to live more peacefully, more lovingly, in a more godly, united way, we'll take another kind of journey altogether. The Bible, I think, echoes that. The Bible speaks of an incredible journey, not about a human being going from earth to someplace else, but of God coming from someplace else, from heaven, and landing here on earth, touching down in a little podunk place called Bethlehem. God landed in human form, the person of Jesus, and from that place, Jesus tried to help us as a species take a giant leap forward. He tried to get us to take a journey of transformation. He invited us to go on an incredible adventure with him. See, Jesus understood from the very moment he began his ministry that the really true crucial journey is not one of geography, but of spirituality. He understood that the crucial journey is not where you go out there, but where you go in here. That the crucial journey would be an interior journey that would take you to the place where mindsets and attitudes and perspectives dwell. That place deep within us as human beings that we have free will over to decide how we are going to live, what we will choose, what we will believe, how we will behave. The journey to that place would open a possibility that we could indeed, as people, take a giant leap forward. A leap that we might say would be into the consciousness, into the mind of God. That we'd be able to be programmed as human beings from a very different perspective. The Bible speaks, for example, about we as human beings having been given the mind of Christ, allowing Christ's will, Christ's perspective to begin to shape us and mold us and direct us in our living. The Apostle Paul was talking about the possibility of taking this grand journey to this church, the city of Philippi. Like all churches, you know, they were wrestling with how to coexist as a body of believers. Tensions were forming. And so Paul, in the very beginning part of the letter, he says, I want you to have the same attitude, the same mindset as that of Christ Jesus. I want you to have the same mindset as that of Christ. And then he lays out this incredible journey that Jesus takes. This passage in Philippians 2 is thought of to be one of the earliest church hymns that people recite regularly to sort of remember the story of Jesus, what he did. So Paul writes these words. He says, Jesus, being in very nature God, Jesus being God, being at the highest place of all, there's no place to go up beyond the divine. So Jesus was God. But he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, something to hold on to, something to protect. He wasn't invested in protecting his station, his level of authority, his title. Instead, he says, he took on the nature of a servant. Being born in human likeness, he goes from a place of pure divinity to a place now where he's human. A step down in terms of power, glory. He says, as a human, he kept going down and he decided to be obedient to death. He decided to allow himself to be mistreated, be tortured, be treated in a very undignified way. He allowed himself to be not a human who would be treated like a king, exalted, praised, glorified. He took on the very nature of a servant, allowed himself to die as a criminal on a cross, which was the most demeaning and degrading way to die. We might put the steps of this journey, I have put it on the screen here. It says he starts off as Lord. He steps down to being human. He becomes a servant. He becomes obedient to death. And where? How does he die? On a cross. There's this continual downward trajectory that Jesus takes. Downward mobility. He heads further and further down into the place of self-giving love. The theological term for this is called kenosis. It's self-emptying. Jesus never becomes full of himself. Instead, he empties himself because his goal always is to manifest the character of God, who Jesus shows us, is a servant at heart. This trajectory that Jesus takes is the exact opposite trajectory that the Apollo 11 took, right? They blasted off, went higher and higher into the sky, tried to escape the gravitational pull of Earth. Jesus instead goes down, 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 further and further to the darkness, the suffering, the reality of being human. Because he understands that this kind of a journey is the journey that ultimately leads to life, that leads to restoration, because it is a journey that is guided solely by the physics of love. And love has a logic and a trajectory that is completely at odds with the way we humans are conditioned to think. So he came to say, take this journey with me. He didn't say, come and admire me for how much of a servant's heart I have. Admire me because I am so selfless. He says, let's take this journey together. See, God came to earth to be incarnated, to be embodied in Christ. And the goal, the thought was that now through the Spirit, Christ could be embodied in us. So this incarnational movement would spread from God to one person, from Christ to all people, who would then continue to manifest the mindset and the heart and the character of God. He didn't come simply for us to be grateful for what he did. He came to say, journey with me. Because the paradox is that as you give yourself away, you'll find life. You try to build up your life, you try to make your life about you, you're going to lose it. This paradox lies at the very heart of the gospel. Those who seek to be self-focused are going to lose their lives. Those who give themselves in love will find something in that journey that they could never have possibly imagined from the outside. You will discover the abiding presence of God in that journey of self-emptying love. So he came to trigger that kind of a movement, to fuel it through the Spirit's power and presence. And what he kept running across was, as you might expect, opposition. Who wants to take that journey?
Who wants to go downward, be a servant? Who wants to be thought of as a slave to all? Who wants to suffer and love for others? I'd rather go upward, thank you very much. I want to climb in my position, in my power, in my prestige. That's what we're here to do. But every culture teaches its people. And certainly disciples were well steeped in the principles of their culture. And so no wonder on the very last night of Jesus' life, he's had 3 years to try to get this into them. They're fighting on that last night about who's the greatest disciple. You know, you can sort of hear the people say, well, you know, I'm the one that walked on water with him. So in some ways, I would think that I probably have some cachet you guys don't have. Right? They're all probably pointing out things that they did, how Jesus showed them some favor that said, no, I'm probably more important than you. They're fighting about this. The last night of Jesus' life. So no wonder they sort of blow past that foot washing station. That's not for me. Maybe one of you, but not me. And they find their place, and they probably fought, you know, who gets to sit next to Jesus? He has their pecking order. And I don't know what's going through Jesus' mind. You know, he's about to die. He said, I've just spent 3 years with you guys trying to teach you how to be servants. What can I do to try to make you understand? So he gets up, we're told. He gets up. As the master, he takes off his outer robe, puts a servant towel around his waist, and he kneels down in front of these 12 disciples, and he takes their grimy and dirty feet into his hands. He begins to wash their feet, dries their feet. He goes around and he washes the feet of every single one of these 12 prideful folks trying or vying for attention, power, privilege. He says, this is what I want you to understand. This is how I am. This is the way I'm wired. This is what matters to me most, that we manifest the heart of God, who is a God who's always self-emptying, self-giving, and love for the other. God is never about, hey, notice me. What about my rights? Don't I get what I want? God's always in this place of saying, how do I bless you, serve you, love you? So Jesus has spent 3 years saying things like, you know, you want to be great in God's kingdom? You got to be a slave to all. Those who try to exalt themselves, they're going to be humbled. Those who humble themselves, they're going to be exalted. That's how it works in God's kingdom. God honors the greatness of servanthood. You really want to be like God, he says, pray for those who've hurt you. Don't attack them. Don't malign them. That's easy. That's what's expected. That's what your ego says. No, what I want you to do is to get down on your knees and pray for that person. The person that you believe and know is the least deserving of your prayer or attention. Pray for that person. Now you're getting close to the heart of God. Or, take it a step further, I want you to love your enemies. Anybody can love a friend or a neighbor. No problem. Here's your challenge. Love the person that you have no regard for at all, that you have hostility towards. Why? That's what God is doing 24/7. God is loving the very people who have no regard for God, curse God, believe God is a fool, whatever it might be. That's how God is, so that's how you can be if you choose to take this journey into the very realms of love. So that night, you know, Jesus took one small step as a man, kneeled down before these disciples, and he thought in that one small step that maybe they could yet something that would lead indeed to a giant leap forward for humankind. That this notion of becoming people who radiate and embody the love of Christ could move throughout God's people. So every time that we take one small step in love, every time we choose to forgive somebody, even when it's hard, Even when we choose to be gracious, when our egos cry out for something different. When we choose to empty our pockets, not to buy something for ourselves, but to help bless somebody else. Whenever we choose, indeed, to be able to try to see someone that we have labeled as enemy to be a son or a daughter of God, whenever we take those steps, we are taking a step that indeed can allow all of us as a species to take one giant leap forward. The church's job, the church's mission is something far more important than whatever NASA is dreaming up. Going to the moon, going to Mars, those might be technological wonders, but they're not going to allow us as a species to go to where we need to go. The church's job is to be the light in the darkness, to be the example, to be the people who finally get it, who go through life choosing to be people who in their heart of hearts are foot washers, servants of all, because we know that that is revealing for our world, the very nature of God. And it is to this God we gather here this morning to worship and praise, that we give all praise and honor and glory today, tomorrow, and indeed forevermore.